And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is now Understanding Autism every second Monday from 3 to 4. And again, the thank you to Bob Hackett of Reitenauer, Hyten, and Lewis on Law Talk. And now Understanding Autism. This is great. Paul, Kim, how are you guys?
Great.
Doing good.
I haven't seen you guys for a month, have I? Or has it been? No, about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Right?
It'd be a month for me.
About a month. Well, three.
How come I haven't seen you, Kim? I know you. Oh, you fly out all over the place.
Yes. That's why. I was gone a lot this past month.
No doubt. Well, let me give a little bit of a brief outline or bio of the stars of the show, which is Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon. Kimberly has worked with people on the autism spectrum for over 14 years. Can you believe that? 14 years. I remember that. Because I've known you for more than 14 years. I won't say how long, though. Ages 2 to 45 plus. You also have worked with individuals within the following therapeutic models: relationship development intervention, that's RDI, applied behavior analysis, ABA, Stanley Greenspan's floor time model, the picture exchange communication system, treatment and education of autistic and communication-related handicap children, sensory integration, this goes on and on. Wow. Facilitated communication in the National Association of Child Development. Is there something you haven't done? And Sunrise Option Program. So you currently have your own consulting business that focuses on learning principles of relationship development intervention, as well as offers full RDI programming. And which is near and dear to my heart, because we've said it before, RDI is very similar. And from my opinion, I wasn't going to say it, but NLP. And you've had clients in eight different states across the U.S., and you specialize in working with teens and adults, which is sort of unusual, you tell me, is a lot of people work with the younger people.
I think that's changing, but it when I started, I guess about 5 years ago, more heavily diving into that population, it was unusual.
That is.
Thankfully, now I think people are becoming more comfortable.
Well, that's very, very good and very important, because you don't want to leave any group out. Everyone needs assistance, and that's what you do. You have a Bachelor of Science degree in psychology from the University of Maryland, a professional certification in relationship development intervention, and will have your master's degree in counseling studies in December 2011. I'm going to Minnesota, aren't
cool.
I?
Yes.
I said
you're
it on
invited.
There. Right? In the spring, right? You already
yep.
asked me to book that date.
Yes.
What date is that? Did you ever find out? We're having a
yet.
Private conversation
know.
Right now.
I'm not sure. I'll let you know as soon as I find out.
I hope so. I have to get my plane tickets. Now, Paul Loudon, welcome all the way from Texas. You know, Paul is amazing. I got to tell you, on there, you are absolutely amazing, articulate. And what's so important is you have a giving heart. And you're a 28-year-old young man who was diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome at age 23. You have a great heart to help others and spread autism awareness to as many as you can. And, of course, you hope people can gain insight and help from your experience. And you're just showing up. I mean, Woody Allen always said success, 80% of success is showing up. You show up all the way from Houston, Texas, and for one purpose, to really help others. So welcome, Paul.
Well, thank you. I'm here to help.
I've made them blush. Okay, see, I'm good at making people blush. So that's the introductions. Now introduce me, Kim. I'm kidding. Okay. Well, you have a special guest. This is very exciting when you
yes.
have a guest. I think this is your first guest.
Yes. It's our first guest.
The pressure's on.
Yeah, the pressure's on. Why don't you introduce
yes.
the mystery guest?
Well, technically I was a guest, but I don't think we are going to ask you to be a host, too.
You
might get a little crowded
true.
Here if we make all of us hosts.
That's right.
True.
Well, you can always boot me out because I'm a neurolinguistic programmer. Okay.
No, I'm really excited, actually, to introduce our guest today. He is somebody that I have known for many years, that I admire and respect very much, who has an amazing set of skills, talents, and killer instincts. Not very many people have the intuition to work with this population that comes so naturally. But Rich Mastin is our special guest, and I have just been in awe of how amazing he is one-on-one with the students that we've both worked with and, you know, all the people you're helping right now at your center.
Well, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And Rich is the Clinical Director of Therapeutic Services at Lawrence Institute for Education, also known as the Life Center. And he's also a board-certified music therapist and finishing up his board certification in ABA pretty soon, in the near future.
Yeah, it's hopefully within the next month or so.
Yeah. So welcome. We're so glad to have you.
Well, thank you. And I don't know what to say about all those kind comments other than I've had some great teachers. You, of course, being one of the very first. So I certainly appreciate that.
Thank you. It was great working with Rich. And I used to work together at the Center for Autism Research and Education. So we shared some clients and we were a great team. We had a lot of We went through a lot together, actually. There was a lot.
Yes, we did.
Yeah. So I'm just so glad to introduce you now, though, as a clinical director of therapeutic services. I mean, I'm just amazed at what you and the team at Life has done. Can you tell us a little bit about Life for the people who are listening?
It's a three-hour show, right?
Yeah.
So I have some time.
Right.
Lauren's, we're going into our fourth year, and just the fact that we're still around after 4 years, I think, says that we must be doing something at least reasonably well, and hopefully that's in the services that we're providing to our kids. But we started about 4 years ago as Lawrence Institute to create a new therapy center in the East Valley for children with special needs. So we're not necessarily a center specifically for autism, but for any children that have special needs. And we are slowly evolving to what you mentioned earlier, to serving all kinds of folks outside of that pediatric area. So we have a pilot program going now where we're serving adults as well.
What would special needs include?
Well, with the pervasive diagnosis of autism right now, the vast majority of the consumers that we serve are on the spectrum. But Lauren, our namesake, Lauren actually has a very rare genetic syndrome called Sanfilippo syndrome. I actually remember once in one of my preclinical studies from ASU working with a young man with Sanfilippo syndrome, and the classroom teacher said, well, you're never, ever going to see this again. So I said, okay. And then about 2 months or so later, I got a phone call from a woman named Carrie Reed, who had a daughter named Lauren that was also diagnosed with Sanfilippo syndrome. And so I realized that as rare as it is, you never know who you might meet.
Right. When Paul and I, we actually went to visit Lauren's Institute, and we were able to see some of the programs that the kids were doing at your center. Can you tell us a little bit about, we were able to see your academy, which I thought was amazing. Maybe you could tell people a little bit more.
Sure. Well, we opened with the intention of, again, trying to change the landscape for serving individuals with special needs in the East Valley. Carrie Reed, who's Lauren's mom, and one of her therapists, Margaret Trevelyan, were spending so much time together driving all over the valley and putting 300 miles a week on their car, taking Lauren to all of her really essential therapies. And along the way, she developed a really outstanding team of speech therapists, occupational therapists, physical therapists, music therapists, applied behavior analysis, a little bit of everything. The problem they were running into is, despite having a really great, great all-star team, they were all working for different agencies and different parts of town, and it really lacked this cohesive approach. And when it comes to teaching or learning anything, having a consistent approach to that learning is really critical to the child's success. So Carrie and Margaret decided to bring all these different essential disciplines together under one roof and actually try to help us act as a team as opposed to just a bunch of individual treating therapists.
I think consistency is a really good point. I was thinking of Paul. We've talked about that so many times.
Well, and just a comprehensive approach where there's the interaction between the different people involved with the same patient so that it's less a series of individuals working and more of a team thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't matter how good the individual therapists are if they're not on the same page. And when you look at, you know, a skill like teaching a child their phone number can be really easily messed up. When you have a speech therapist that's having that child sequence a 7-digit number that's the home phone, and then they go to OT and their occupational therapist is practicing with dad's cell phone number, and all of a sudden this poor
right.
child doesn't know which set of seven digits to memorize or which to use at a certain time. So
communication
is absolutely the key.
Right. I think that's really important. I know in my experience, I've been very fortunate, actually. I've worked with so many great professionals, but I've also worked in situations where communication, you know, I think probably hindered a little bit some of the forward movement for some of my clients. And so it's nice that it's nice to hear that at Lorenz Institute you value that collaborative approach and focus on the communication and the consistency. And I know in previous shows we've talked about consistency and how confusing it is for people with autism when they don't understand why things are happening or if things are changing all over the place. And, you know, again, that consistency, I think, is really important.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, that's something I ran into a lot just during education at school is when I'd get, you know, different feedback from different teachers over the same behaviors, it would leave me very confused. Or when I was told this was the rule book and I didn't understand why. And so I can see having people who are able to be on the same page rather than leading in different directions could or would definitely be a vast benefit.
And it's so nice to hear that, too, I think, from Paul, because at this point I know you have many younger kids at the Lorenz Institute. And one thing we value about having Paul on the show is he can articulate so many of his experiences being on the spectrum that a lot of our kids, you know, can't maybe articulate. And it makes me feel so good to know that this approach that you're taking is clarifying and collaborative and in the best interest of the individual.
Well, it's really not an easy process. And, you know, just having a single roof with all these different clinicians underneath it doesn't make you a team at all. But there's a growing amount of research out there that really is starting to clarify what goes into a successful treatment team. And it's not just the clinicians. The most important two people of any treatment team is the patient or the consumer and their parents. Right. And if we're not integrating them into the treatment approach, we're never going to be successful. As therapists, we'd like to think we know what we should be teaching, what skills we should be transferring. But at the end of that day, if it's not directly applicable to that family and their lifestyle, it's really all for nothing.
Right. Yeah.
Well, would it be, how about someone older, though? You got the patient, obviously, but would the parent be substituted then for maybe family members or where they live? Is that then equivalent to what the two most important people would be?
Yeah. You know, it's there's so much talk about natural environment teaching these days, and that individuals, especially that birth to three range, really just need to be working with their parents in the home, and it's kind of limited to that mindset. Well, I don't know many 2 or 3 year olds anymore whose natural environment really is just their parents and maybe a grandparent. It's aunts and uncles, it's neighbors, it's school teachers, it's the people that attend the same church. It's a really growing network of folks. And it's so critical to find a way to get all those people involved for a good outcome.
And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with special guest Rich Mastin from the Lorenz Institute for Education as the clinical director. And, of course, we have Kim Isaac and Paul Alden in the studio. This is Understanding Autism. We'll be right back.
At Birenbaum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Understanding Autism, starring Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon. Special in-studio guest Rich Mastin, Clinical Director for Lawrence Institute for Education. It's really a pleasure to have you here.
Well, thanks again. What a great opportunity to talk a little bit more about what we're doing.
It's very, very important. So, Kim, I'll bring it right back to you.
Well, we wanted to actually give out the phone number of the station. We would love to have anybody call in who has a question for Rich, for Paul, or for myself. The phone number here is 602-296-3632, and we're going to be taking questions after the next commercial break, so definitely get your questions ready and be ready to call in.
Very nice. You're right. On the break, you told me to say that, and guess what I did? I deferred it to you. But yeah. I can do that as a host. I can delegate. Okay.
All right. So, Rich, you haven't mentioned yet exactly where the center is and what kind of facilities you've got there.
Well, we're out in the Southeast Valley, kind of on the corner of Gilbert and Queen Creek, actually on Higley and Queen Creek Roads. We've grown from, 4 years ago, we opened with 35 employees serving 100 families. 4 years later, we've grown to three buildings, 200 employees serving 500 families. So to say the growth has been exponential would kind of be an understatement. But the services have, for the most part, remained the same. The core services that we deliver are speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy, music therapy, applied behavior analysis, which in Arizona falls under the realm of habilitation. And then we have a private academy offering a true education to those with special needs from kindergarten through about sixth grade right now.
Yeah, Paul and I had an opportunity to go see Lawrence Institute and see the buildings and all of the structure you've set up. And we were talking before the break a little bit, too. I mean, the idea of the everything under one roof, I think, is just, it's really amazing because we know, you know, this show is about autism. A lot of people with autism have other difficulties in conjunction with their autism, and a lot of times they need speech therapy or occupational therapy or physical therapy, and like you were saying, the stress of having to drive, you know, wasting times or driving around from service to service is a waste of time. And so it's nice that it's all under the same roof.
It is. And you know, I am a fan, again, I don't mean to be down on it, I am a fan of natural environment teaching, but having been a house-to-house music therapist doing home health, I can assure you in Arizona it's relatively difficult to lug around a grand piano for your treatment. But realistically, in services like physical therapy, occupational therapy, even speech therapy, there are certain tools of the trade in terms of equipment that are really essential in helping some of these kids really succeed. We have a large indoor playground at Lawrence Institute, so we can use it more than, you know, 1 month out of the year when it's not too hot. But again, what is a child's job? Their job is to learn how to play. So if we're doing physical therapy or occupational therapy, we need to have the kind of tools that kids learn to play with, like a swing set in a playground.
You know, that's interesting how you frame that. A kid's job is learn how to play. And do parents understand that, or do they try to expect too much from their kids?
You know, I think a lot of parents and just people in the general community think that play is a skill that is just you're born with and everybody can do it.
Yeah, I think I was going to say almost the same thing, is that one experience I ran into a lot is that people expect things that they had as a natural reaction or a reflex or what have you is something that everyone's going to have inborn, that you know, that I run into people not able to understand when I tell them, I don't understand, you know, what you're feeling here. I don't understand your reaction to this. And I was thinking that would be the same thing, is that because other people just played, you know, they encountered toys, they encountered playgrounds, and they played, they expect that instinct is there for everyone.
Yeah, it's a really actually a very complex thing to talk about. I mean, what we're really talking about are two things: learning how to play and learning how to play functionally. And then also just learning how to learn. A lot of people take that for granted as well, that all kids come with the prerequisites that are necessary to learn skills. And a lot of times those prerequisites don't get addressed, and that's why you don't see the kind of progress that we're really looking for.
Well, included in the definition of learning how to play, would fun come in there?
It better, because if kids aren't having fun, they're not learning.
See, that's the interesting thing, because unless you really define play, some people play seriously, and maybe there's no fun involved. But I could tell from how you were describing this that fun has to be an important part, but the emotional having an emotional happiness to yourself.
Absolutely.
Well, there's a difference between telling someone, now go slide down that slide, and creating a situation where someone wants to go slide down that slide because they're getting something back from it.
Well, and one of the challenges that we're up against every day is, as we're teaching kids to play, I hate the word typical, so I'm just going to put that as a disclaimer. I don't think there is any such thing as a typical kid. But most typical kids get a lot of enjoyment out of doing things like, you know, playing with their Matchbox cars and their dolls and all that. Well, some of the kids that we serve don't really get a lot of enjoyment out of that. So we need to build motivation into those tasks so that they're more likely to engage in those activities in the future. And what it really comes down to is the therapist that they're working with and that person being engaging and motivating so that the child is having some fun.
Well, how do you build motivation into a kid to allow them to experience, like Paul was saying, some type of pleasure?
You know, I think all individuals are really striving to have some pride in what they do. And a sense of accomplishment, even with a two-year-old, is something that can be very, very tangible. And, you know, even though a certain child may not, again, I use the Matchbox car example, they may not push a car across the floor and, you know, get full of smiles and laugh about it. But if you can create an interaction with that child around whatever it is that they're doing, that's typically where I see the motivation. In music therapy, again, what I find so really unique about that discipline is we don't really have to add the fun in, or we don't have to add like a carrot at the end of the activity to get the child motivated, because hopefully in music therapy, the interventions that we're presenting are in and of themselves rewarding for the child.
You know, it reminds me of a commercial. I don't know if you guys are old enough to remember this, but ever hear of Shakey's Pizza Parlor?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Then I'm not so old
after
all. It's
a California thing.
Well, they used to, the commercial was, we serve fun at Shakey's, also fun. I mean, we serve food at Shakey's, also fun. And they were trying to create that experience. It wasn't just eating. It was an experience of dining.
Well, I think, in my experience, Rich was saying that sense of pride or accomplishment, competence is a huge motivator. And when a person realizes that they have an effect on the world around them and on people around them, that is highly motivating. And that is how, and I am with you on, it's, I don't like to use the word like typical kids, but I'll say in typical development, that's what's motivating, is learning that you have an impact on the world around you and on others. And that's a motivating thing.
And the impact can be anything. I mean, if you are looking at something in a negative fashion, that has an impact too. So is that part of what you teach too, is how to have a positive impact?
Well, I know in my experience, I mean, I'm always sort of in that, you want to create situations where a person is successful. I mean, you want, that's kind of, I know that's how the approach I've always taken. I know we have, we do some different kinds of therapies, but I think from the part of the therapist, I mean, thinking about things in the positive is critical. I mean, we're role models for these kids. Another point that I was thinking when Rich was talking about the playground, you know, something I've seen over the last 14 years is sometimes it's really easy when people hear the word autism, they forget to let their kids be kids. And I think, and understandably, I think there's a lot of fears and there's a lot of worry about the future. And I think that play is so important. It gets overlooked. It's like, we got to teach them stuff. And then childhood goes by and they don't get the chance to be kids. And I feel like from what you're describing, you really value that at the center and encourage that.
I think you have to. I mean, one of the first things I usually tell our new employees or interns is, first of all, well, you can't break these kids, okay? You may not do everything right, but they are just kids. So let's get down on the floor, let's get some holes on our knees, and let's play. As far as the fun goes, again, I mean, the fact is we're asking kids and our adults, too, to do things that are difficult for them. Otherwise, they wouldn't necessarily be
right
there. So if motivation isn't the thing and fun that our therapists are thinking about day in and day out, odds are these kids are going to want to try to escape and avoid the tasks that we're presenting.
You know, this could be a lesson for all adults in the world about having more fun. And, you know, people have goals, and it's about having stuff, the extra car, the other house, the, you know, vacations, whatever. They lose sight of what's really what these things are supposed
to
bring.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'd say that, you know, motivation is the difference between teaching and training. You know, you're motivated to learn, but if you're not motivated, then you're just being trained, and that's not something you ever want to be doing to a person.
That totally makes sense. So that, you know, that's very important. And so I really honor, you know, Rich, what you're doing there. It's really sounds like a fully integrated approach. And some of the words that came to my mind, some of you have already talked about it, is consistency. But it seems like it's a coordination of all these great therapists that you have under one roof.
It is. I mean, I think the things that are, that really go into a successful interdisciplinary approach are things like trust, open and honest communication, mutual respect. And let me tell you, that's not always easy when you have very highly educated people working together. Shared responsibility and a commitment to education. I mean, those are big things, and they're not easily accomplished.
Well, you have an incredible mission statement, and it's really, you also talk about best practices, which I found very interesting. Who came up with that, first of all, the mission statement, as well as the best practices?
Well, I would read it while you can, because it's only going to be around for maybe another month or so, and we're redoing our mission statement.
But I love it, though.
the hard thing is even I can't memorize it. But anyways, best practice really comes into play here in that when it comes to children with autism or any other number of special needs, parents only have so much money, they only have so much time, and there are too many miles to cover to get all these treatments. So what we're really looking for are those interventions that have been shown through research and evidence to be most likely to achieve a positive outcome. There's a great cartoon where a parent is looking at a menu of services at an autism clinic, and it's like speech therapy, occupational therapy, music therapy, astronomy, pig therapy. There's so many things that you could do, but picking the ones that do have research and evidence behind them, in my personal opinion, is what's going to get a family the farthest ahead.
And that's very impressive. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with special in-studio guest Rich Mastin from Lawrence Institute for Education, the clinical director. And, of course, we have Kimberly Isaac and Paul Alden in studio. This is Understanding Autism. We'll be right back.
Are you able to ensure the safe driving and productivity of your employees? I'm Kara Lee with GPS Heroes, and with our plug-and-play GPS device, you can set geofences, get speeding alerts, and a full report card each week with driver reports and mileage, all to your computer or handheld device. It's easy to get and easy to use, in real time, with no service contracts. Just go to gpsheroes.org/21 and order yours today. That's gpsheroes.org/21.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Understanding Autism, starring Kimberly Isaac and Paul Loudon. Special in-studio guest Rich Mastin, the clinical director for Lawrence Institute for Education. And if you want to call in, feel free. You can ask Kim, Rich, and Paul questions anywhere and any question you want regarding probably anything. We'll just leave it open. 602-296-3632, 602-296-3632. And, Paul, you wanted to start off with a question.
When we visited Lawrence Institute, Rich talked a little bit about some of the work he was doing with adults and how he sort of wanted to expand upon that in the future. So what are your upcoming plans or hopes?
Well, when we were founded 4 years ago, we truly were a pediatric center, and that's what we started to do. But in a short 4 years, we're already seeing some of our special ones that are getting older and starting to outgrow the programming that we offer. And quite honestly, you know, you mentioned it early, there's such a focus on pediatrics, and for good reason. You want to get them early and you want to hit them hard, but what happens when they turn 14 or 16 or 25 or 35?
Or 55.
Or 55. It goes on and on. So we're going to start small and slow. But what we're doing is we do have a pilot program going now where we have a beautiful home out in the Queen Creek area where we're serving about a half a dozen adults with special needs, autism, Down syndrome, and a number of issues. But really, it all goes back to the same thing. I mean, to summarize what Lawrence Institute for Education is about, it's about quality of life. There are agencies out there that are about the cure or raising awareness and a number of very, very important things. But for us, it's about how do we affect quality of life for these folks. And with adults, we're teaching skills to kids so that they can learn to go to the movies or so that they can learn to eat in a restaurant with their utensils and do all these things that they need to do. But as when we're looking at the adult population, we're really looking to capitalize on individual skills so that they can start actually working in a restaurant and learning how to work at the movie theater and prepare food and take care of their apartment and those sort of things. So we're moving towards a model where we'd like to have real-world scenarios like a small movie theater, a small restaurant, and an apartment where we can actually be training, working with adults to perform those job responsibilities that anybody else would in the community. For example, selling tickets at the movie theater. At the same time, our little ones that come to us can buy their tickets and practice what it, you know, there's a lot of skills that go into sitting and watching a movie. So we're trying to hit both sides of that situation at the same time.
That's a great, great planning. I mean, who thought of that?
Oh, goodness, I can't take credit for that. I mean, most of the ideas at Lawrence Institute come from Margaret Trevelyan and Carrie Reed. I mean, they were really the ones that were envisioning all of these things. And I've learned with those two women, when they say they want to do something, look out, because they're going to do it. It's just a matter of time.
Well, you know, that's remarkable growth. I mean, 4 years from 35 employees to 200 families, 100 to 500. How did that happen? Was it just because there's so much demand out there and not enough places to really help?
You hit it on the head. I mean, it wasn't a clever marketing scheme. I mean, we're a not-for-profit organization, so we're not interested in how many sessions we can bill in a month, with the exception of trying to keep our doors open. What it really came down to is just there is an overwhelming number of consumers that are sitting on wait lists in the state of Arizona for these really critical therapies, and we just happened to position ourselves in a part of town where there really wasn't anywhere else to go. And look out, because Margaret and Carrie have said that 2012 is the year to move west into the West Valley, and hopefully we can replicate some of the success that we've had out in Gilbert.
Have you had other states, other cities all over the country looking to model what you're doing?
You know, I'd say it's the other way around. When we started this organization, we were really intent on going out and seeing what other people were doing and whether or not it was successful. So we've had trips to California and trips to New York and a little bit of everywhere in between, because certainly don't want to recreate the wheel. And there has been so many very successful, very dedicated, hardworking individuals that have done a lot of research, doing great things. And we just hope to take little pieces of those and bring it to Lawrence Institute.
You know, what I think would be interesting is talk a little bit about your background and really included in that question, what draws you, what attracted you to this particular industry?
That's a tough question. Honestly, I have very strong memories as a child growing up in New York where my parents were very diligent about getting me out into places that sometimes make kids uncomfortable. You know, the fact is nursing homes can be scary environments for little ones. Well, so can clinics or agencies that work with those with special needs. So most kids are somewhat anxious about situations like that where they're exposed to differences. For whatever reason, those experiences I've always held very dear to. And after originally getting a business degree from the College of Worcester and being very dissatisfied with really just focusing on dollars, was blessed to have Arizona State University right next door once I moved out here, and they have a fantastic music therapy program. So that is ultimately what got me re-involved in working with individuals with special needs, meeting people like Barbara Crow, who's the director of music therapy at ASU, and then a great internship where I met someone named Kim that showed me quite a bit, and now here we are.
You know, that I think that's interesting. Can you describe a little bit for those who don't know how music therapy works?
Absolutely.
I'm a huge fan of music therapy, I have to tell you.
I think that's
good.
I'm
amazed by it. And unfortunately, it's some people don't understand the significance of it. I mean, some people may think, oh, music, you know, fluff or something. It is amazing. It's very interesting and regulating and soothing and part of learning how to connect and have fun. And I've watched Rich many, many sessions, and I'm continuously amazed at what he can do with people and help them through music.
The easiest way to describe music therapy is actually by describing what it is not. There's a pretty common misconception that the goal of music therapy is to teach individuals with special needs or other areas, even geriatrics, Alzheimer's, those sorts of things, to acquire musical skills. So that, you know, teach my kiddo with autism how to play the piano. And the fact is, it couldn't be further from the truth. What we're trying to accomplish in music therapy is we're working towards outcomes and goals that are actually non-musical in nature: communication, social skills, fine and gross motor skills, sensory processing. Those are the areas that we're working towards. It just so happens that, you know, an OT, an occupational therapist, will work with beans and scissors and crayons and those things. But our tools are guitars and pianos and songs and dancing. And fortunately, those things are very motivating for most kids, particularly those individuals with autism.
So how does that work then? So you're using music to teach really non-musical skills. How does that translate? So how does that create better communication? How does it create social skills, for example?
You may need to give us a little sample.
Oh, you're going to sing for us?
I don't know if I'm...
I'll do the background.
Uh-oh, I put him on the spot. No, I've just seen so many cool... Something I remember, and I'm not trying to steal your spotlight here, but I just remember, you know, even things like children learning greetings, how to greet people. I just remember there were some really cool musical songs that I've seen you and Miss Kathleen come up with to almost help teach how people greet through music, or please and thank you, how to teach manners through music. Or, I mean, it was just so amazing to watch the learning be fun.
They may not be board certified, but kindergarten teachers are some of the best music therapists that you could find, even though they may not be board certified music therapists. They're very aware of one very important thing, which is music is a great way to pass on information and to retain that information. And we didn't learn our ABCs just saying A, B, C, D. And we all sung the song, and that's how it stuck.
We did all sit. Dad, did you sing the song?
I did. I could do it backwards. I could do it to Jimi Hendrix.
And actually, you know, for a lot of people, Jimi Hendrix can be music therapy. But if he was still around, he'd probably be a great therapist to some
extent. You're too young to remember Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, no, believe it or not.
Really?
But anyways, with music therapy, we're providing, again, the motivation to learn and succeed that is musical in nature, whether it's singing call-and-response songs, or most kids, when they're involved in music, well, they move. They just don't sit there. So there's action songs. There's instrument playing. So, again, an example might be one therapist might work on developing fine motor skills like a pincer grasp for a child. Well, it's not a whole lot of fun, and it may be difficult for that child. But if we can present some novel, really exciting instruments for them to practice those same skills with, we're going to get closer to that outcome of improving that child's fine motor skills.
Well, that totally makes sense. Now, do you find some of your, would you call them clients, patients, or
kids?
Kids.
Kids is my favorite word.
I say students, but see, I don't have so many little kids anymore.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't really have any little kids anymore.
You know, it's. I think it's, you know, our client, patient, consumer, is, that's one of those definitions that seems to rotate every few years. And at the end of the day, I usually, because most of the individuals I work with are, in fact, kids, that's the word that I usually go with.
So does anyone actually want to select a certain instrument to really become very proficient at it, or is that not the goal?
It's absolutely a possibility. There's a huge misconception in the media that children with autism have savant-like abilities. And what it looks like the research may say, who really knows, is that there's probably not a whole lot more individuals with autism with savant-like abilities than there are in the whatever the typical population is. But we do know one thing, and it's children with autism, when presented with a variety of options for activities to engage in, sports, reading, music, they gravitate towards music for some reason. And my personal belief there is music can be a very non-threatening way to communicate and interact with other people. Since the dawn of time, people don't sit around and play music to themselves in a cave. They're sharing those musical experiences with other people, which goes back to one of those core deficits in autism, which is either communication or socialization. So music can be a fantastic way to bridge some of those gaps.
And also, I've seen it help children and adults sort of self-soothe and self-regulate. In fact, the other day, somebody we both know was having sort of a stressful day, and I could tell that he was real fidgety and couldn't really get a rhythm in life, you know, just moving. And I turned on his metronome, and I sort of adjusted the speed, and I watched him really carefully, and I found a speed that seemed to help him sort of get himself together. And he started like this, and he calmed way down, and I thought, I love this metronome. But the rhythm of music, I think, can be, especially for people, and Paul, we've talked about this in previous shows, patterns. There's a lot of patterns in music, and I think that that can be very soothing for people. And I know you and I have talked about music a little bit sometimes.
Oh, yes. I love music myself. I find that I often have a very strong emotional response to music, probably stronger than I have to a lot of other stuff, and it's very... For me, you know, if I'm having a bad day or whatever, the right song can really turn everything around, just finding the right playlist on my MP3 player. And honestly, you know me, I mean, I have headphones on about 95% of the time that I'm anywhere, you know. Unless I'm talking with people or need to be interacting, I've got something playing in my ears. And it helps me a lot just to have sound going constantly.
Well, I remember when you and I, long time ago when we were first talking, I remember that it was hard to find something that would emotionally sort of alter your mood or your emotions, and music was one of them. And I thought that was really interesting, and it goes along with what we've been talking about.
Well, I'm going to guess, I'm going to say it again, from an NLP perspective, there's different learning styles, kinesthetic, auditory, of course, visual. I'm thinking music will hit people on two levels, auditory and at a kinesthetic level.
Absolutely.
The vibrations. Is that what you find? Mm.
That, and you know, just the mind's ability to remember things from an unconscious perspective. And so many, you know, peak performances in musicians occur at a very subconscious level. They're not thinking about the masterful work that they're actually performing. If they were to think about it, it's kind of like, you know, the next time you play someone in tennis, you want to win, ask them how high he throws the ball before they serve. Well, that game is over with. It's the same thing in music. A lot of these things that we're asking kids to do are being processed at a subconscious level, which actually makes it easier for them.
And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with special in-studio guest Rich Mastin, Clinical Director for Learn's Institute for Education. And, of course, we have Kimberly Isaac and Paul Loudon in studio. This is Understanding Autism. The phone number to call if you would like to ask a question is 602-296-3632, 602-296-3632, and we'll be right back.
Weidenauer, Hynten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions. real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, a private client practice. Reidenauer, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Understanding Autism, starring Kimberly Isaac and Paul Loudon, with special in-studio guest Rich Mastin, clinical director for the Lawrence Institute for Education. We've been talking about some really great topics, especially this music therapy. I think this sounds phenomenal. And Paul, I think you had something you want to say about
this. Well, I mean, I've never seen music therapy firsthand, so I don't have any direct experience with it. But, you know, I spent a lot of time thinking about how we communicate, because this is something that's very important to me. It's one of the areas where I find difficulties is communication. And music is a way of expressing, you know, emotions, but without the constrained form of verbal communication. It's a sharing of emotions, but it's sort of, I want to say more direct, or not necessarily direct, but a more direct connection. You go straight to the music without the sort of cognitive processes of forming words out of what you're thinking, for me.
Well, again, music can be very non-threatening, which is a key part of why I think music therapy can be so successful. And Kim, you mentioned regulation earlier, and regulation is, if you're thinking, it's the way for someone to essentially operate at an optimal level of arousal. And, you know, it's a great example of music therapy in kind of a silly way is, If you fill a boardroom full of a bunch of guys in stuffed suits that don't look like they're a whole lot of fun or would necessarily want to, you know, have a musical experience, you pump some John Philip Sousa through the speakers in that room, and I guarantee you after about 30 seconds, they will all be tapping their feet to that rhythm. Like it or not, you can't ignore some of the neurological processes that go hand in hand with music.
And that's why we have elevator music.
Absolutely
music
a great
therapy
point as well.
Every time you get in one.
And the music itself is so unique to every individual. It's really important that we don't subscribe as music therapists one set type of music, and that's what the individual is going to be forced to listen to or participate in. Going back to motivation, we need to find the style of music or the instruments or the setting that is most suitable for that individual. And studies have shown that for some adolescents, listening to heavy metal music actually lowers their heart rate and slows their respiration. For me, the death metal makes me want to run very quickly away in the opposite direction. but for some other people, it really has a calming effect, whereas some slower tempo music may actually be arousing for certain individuals.
How is it for you, Paul?
I'm more of a classic rock person myself. Led Zeppelin, Steppenwolf, things from that general era.
Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, absolutely.
There we go. I knew we'd get him in again. you know, what strikes me as interesting, I'm going to ask this question, but I think I know the answer. Does music build rapport between you and the kids?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And in just so many ways. Number one, there's, you know, part of rapport is trust. You know, you got to have trust to have rapport. And again, we're working with kids that may not or probably don't have any formal music experience. You know, if you ask most adults to sit down and play the piano and they don't know how to play, they're going to look at you like you're crazy. So somehow we have to convince our clients that yes, you're going to be successful and it's going to be fun and you can't be wrong. In music therapy, we work very, very hard to ensure that what is being heard is pleasing to the child. I don't like to use toy instruments. We want to use instruments that really have a good sound quality.
I saw something interesting recently in technology that I thought sort of might be interesting to you, actually, is Microsoft has a device called the Kinect, which was a new video game accessory. But there's also been a lot of people doing really interesting things with it in computers. And this one actually allowed people to play a music track, and then they could dance to it, and their dance would actually alter the music track, the sound of it, the tempo of it, depending on their movements. And so they were able to basically generate music with their own body motions without directly interacting with the music. It would track their movements and sort of choreograph the sound to them rather than the other way around.
Yeah, we're really interested in Lawrence Institute and how we can use technology in our music therapy sessions, and we do it in a number of ways. One thing that we've been dying to do is there's a new device out there that actually uses lasers, and as your body moves through the lasers, it changes the pitch and the timbre and the tempo of the music. And some of our individuals that come to see us have very limited mobility. So just being able to reach out an arm might be a very difficult
That's
task for them.
Basically what this was.
Absolutely. So technology from that perspective can be great. The other thing that we like to do is we spend a lot of time actually providing audio recordings of the kids during music therapy. And it does two things. It gives these kids instant feedback so they can hear themselves being played back and what they've accomplished, increases the motivation, but it also, we can send home with the parents a CD of what we were working on during that session, so when they're driving to and from the grocery store all week, they can be practicing the same music that they were hearing in the car.
That is so exciting.
Do you have, like, concerts that you promote? I mean, with all the kids? Is that the next step?
I'm so glad you asked that. We, for the second year in a row, we've actually put on a musical featuring a cast of a dozen or so children with special needs, and it has... It's really kind of, I hate to say it, it's been life-changing for everyone involved. The parents got to witness their kids doing something that simply wasn't an option anywhere else. And on a very large scale, this year they did Alice in Wonderland, and you can probably guess that's no small thing. Last year it was, I believe, The Wizard of Oz. And so the kids got a tremendous amount of satisfaction about participating. They memorized lines, the choreography, all these things. But I tell you what, I think our therapists and our parents probably got more out of it than anyone because they realized these kids are capable of putting together an entire musical. And some of these kids, quite honestly, I mean, they struggle to have short interactions verbally, yet they're up on stage with all these lines they've memorized. It's amazing.
So really, this is a great example of how music really transcends just music. For the kids, it's confidence. For the parents, it would be appreciation, more appreciation for their kids. Seeing them in concert, this is incredible what you're doing.
Well, it goes back to that same thing I said earlier. It's about quality of life. And what does any parent want? They want to see their kid play soccer, or you know, even better, football. They want to see their kid make friends. Maybe they want to see their kid grow up and get a job or even establish a meaningful long-term relationship. Well, one of those things they want to see them do is have the enjoyment and the satisfaction of being involved in a musical or a play or something like that. So although we do therapy, the end goal of any therapy is, well, one of two things, to get them out of therapy and also to provide them meaningful tools that they can take away from that therapy.
Well, let's talk about upcoming fundraisers. What's going on? What do you have going?
Well, this Friday we're going to be at the Raven, which I think is now our fourth annual golf tournament. That's always a big deal for us. It's actually this Friday, April 15th, shotgun start at 12:30 at the Raven. There's a dinner and awards recognition afterwards. I think we do have some foursomes still available. So if you contact us via the web or our main phone number, you can get involved with either signing up a foursome or just attending the dinner. The other thing that we could really use, honestly, is we always do a great silent auction. And as everyone is pinching their pennies as the gas prices go up, we are desperately in need of some auction items still and things to put in the gift baskets.
And do you accept donations, like through your website or anything?
We accept donations in almost any way that people are willing to donate. And there's really a number of ways. If you just go to www.lawrenceinstitute.org, you'll find a donations section. And on there, you can make a donation of just about any amount you choose. But quite honestly, there's a better way to do it. It would be nice to make a donation and then get that donation back. And in the state of Arizona, we're blessed to have a tax redirection or diversion. It sounds illegal, but it's not.
Well, it's not really a diversion. No. We'll call it a credit.
Well, a tax credit.
It is a credit.
Thank you for clarifying.
Is there a CPA
for me.
In the house?
No, yes. One's going to jail in this, trust me. But what it allows you to do is actually put your money towards the things that are important to you. And there are three things that you can do, either a private school, public school, or social service. And we qualify for two of those. So if you're a married couple, you can give up to $1,000, and then you actually get that back dollar for dollar on your taxes.
And the phone number, I believe, is 480-621-8361.
You got it.
And so if people want to get in touch with the Lawrence Institute for Education, they can call 480-621-8361. And I think we only have about a minute left, perhaps, but how do people apply for that? Do they have to apply to be... Well, one of the kids?
The majority of the consumers that we serve, since we're a not-for-profit, are funded by the Department of Developmental Disabilities. So their services are all free of charge for the most part. So if you have a child or you know someone that's on the spectrum or has other special needs, have them contact us, and we'll get the information that, about the Department of Developmental Disabilities that we need in order to start providing services.
Well, thank you so much, Rich Mastin, from the Clinical Director at Lawrence Institute for Education. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
This is great. And Kimberly, what do we got on tomorrow from 3 to 4?
Tomorrow we're going to be talking about a core deficit of autism, social referencing, and the difference between teaching eye contact and actually teaching productive gaze and observation.
Well, that's going to be excellent. So tomorrow from 3 to 4, that's Tuesday, because you've expanded. And again, Rich Mastin from the Lawrence Institute for Education, thank you once again. We'll have to have you on again.
I love it. Thanks so much.
You were fantastic. Paul Loudon, thank you. See you tomorrow. And Kimberly, see you. And we'll be on tomorrow. Also, Bob Berger, Reaching Your Financial Goals from 2 to 3. See you tomorrow.